Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, human.
Under this theory, we're not living in the year that we think we are. The year 2026 would actually be closer to 1729. It appears an entire civilization seems to have passed through some kind of historical fog somehow. We missed that.
There are lots of physicians, I know some, they're doing very strange experimentation. There are beings from portals coming in and out. It's physicists from the CERN who told me this.
They've testified to beings coming in and out of portals.
Yes.
You know, we tell people that we see prehistoric animals on Skinwalker Ranch, and they don't think it's surprising. Normal people will hear that we see, dire wolves or giant ground sloths near or on Skinwalker Ranch, and people are just like, oh yeah, I've seen pictures of those online. But on the subject of lost time, some people really do think that CERN has already broken our timeline.
Recovered from a grandfather clock found ticking underwater in the basement of a closed-down courthouse and approved by a medieval accountant who discovered the year 732 was missing and charged the church for overtime. This is a 21st century dystopian. The only channel on the web with a designated Airbnb on the International Space Station. In this episode, we ask the question, are we even still alive? And why is our entire history nothing more than a what the F moment? And what is CERN actually doing to your pet's self-confidence without you even knowing? And now, walking into the studio like a freaking penguin with a vendetta, a true 21st century dystopian, the G-Host.
You're actually still here? And you actually want to hear what this maniac has to say? What's wrong with you?
Why can't you just accept things for the way that they are?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 21CD podcast. You know, I'm not exactly sure if the days of Noah were as primitive as they want us to believe that they were. I guess they might try to tell us that the days of Noah never actually happened, or the days of Noah did happen, but Noah wasn't there, or whatever they're going to say about Noah. But that's neither here nor there. What I think is that the days of Noah probably weren't as primitive as they seem. They were probably filled with angelic magic. So I guess in that way, it's not exactly tech. They definitely had magic and sorcery and witchcraft and pagan gods that walked beside them and all that kind of stuff. So we know that they just inherently had an ability that nowadays we don't really seem to have, because we're not walking with Nephilim. We're not walking with watchers, right? They may be pulling the strings behind the scenes, but they're not down here with us. They're not helping us build structures. They're not, you know, out here lifting all the heavy stones we can't lift, or giving us the ability to do things that we can't currently do right now. And if they are, it's not like it was in the days of Noah yet, where everybody is seeing this without a shadow of a doubt sort of happening in the world around them, and there's stories of it happening flowing around and, you know, through the ether and reaching ears across the globe and all that kind of stuff. It's not like that. I said globe, I meant Earth. If it's a globe, great. If it's not, I don't really give a shit. So, but my point is, they were probably, most definitely, the most advanced people of the time, and maybe one of the most advanced peoples of time. And if any of those stories from back then, the Bible stories, the myths, the legends, the pyramids, the megaliths that they've put up in the mountains in South America and Asia, and the underground cities that we've found, all of the clocks and timekeeping and mysterious calendars that are very accurate, and all of the bizarre abilities that they seemed to have in the old times based on their construction projects, their knowledge, their stories, if any of that is true at all, then they were in an age where creation itself was mastered, I think. It was kind of an art form. And even though we were left in those days in sort of a position where we couldn't overtake the Nephilim, because obviously we didn't, and so the flood came, we were still in a way that was profound, incredible, and probably horrifying as well. And then all life, creation itself, was completely violated, molested, and abused. And like I said in the last episode, which is sort of a prequel to this episode, our world is beginning to sort of mirror that world in a few ways, because stuff like our identity and our knowledge and our history, our stories, our genetics, it's all becoming editable, destructible, reconstructible, changeable. And that was one of the big problems that we had in the days of Noah. They were changing everything to the way that it wasn't supposed to be. 2 years ago, Dr. Stuckelberger interviewed Maria Z on Z Media. And this interview was published on Rumble, where she discussed many strange things, but one of which was CERN's terrifying experiments. And I barely got to CERN in the last episode when we were talking because my studio was on fire. But today we're going to touch a little bit more on some of the CERN and timeline strange things about CERN and the timeline and what CERN seems to be doing to time. Now, Dr. Stuckelberger claimed that CERN is dealing with radionuclear research, and there are a lot of physicists who are doing very strange experimentation, she said. And she said that there were certain physicists at CERN who told her that there are beings from portals that are coming in and out, okay? And she said, yes. And they were saying, I met them at a dinner, and there were two of them, and both said that, yes, they have, secondhand proof that the people who, they're dealing with, the bosom of Higgs and the subatomic, so they have apparently in the bottom of the CERN this portal, this door, where they are dealing with all the subatomic dimensions. And here you can watch this video, because I totally butchered it.
Actually, CERN is dealing with radionuclear research, but it is more than that, because there are lots of physicians. I know some. They're doing very strange experimentation. There are beings from portals coming in and out. It's physicists from the CERN who told me this.
They've testified to beings coming in and out of portals.
Yes, they have apparently in the bottom of the CERN this portal, this door where they are dealing with all the subatomic dimensions. They say there are 17 different dimensions of reality. That's what those physicists said. Some others say there are more dimensions, And now, when you look at what is going on in the CERN, there is a fight from some of the military agencies, intel. They say that there is a fight on time. They're trying to change time.
So she talks about these 17 different dimensions of reality, and that's what those physicists and some others say as well. And there are more dimensions. Like, we know the time, space, the tri-dimensional X, Y, and Z, but then you have more dimensions. And they are playing with those dimensions. They're trying to get to those dimensions. You know, like we knew, you know, like 1D, 2D, 3D, these are dimensions, right? So there's another one out there. There's more out there, 17 more, allegedly, and some of them these scientists are trying to get to on the subatomic level. She goes on and says, they did not tell me more about who came that doesn't resemble a human. And then they had another one, and they have proof because that one left a scarf. And now, when you look at what is going on in the CERN, there is a fight from some of the military agencies. Intel. They say that there's a fight on time itself. They're trying to change time. I'm just saying that because as a scientist, you cannot say something so important. Because if you can deal with the little, the smallest energies on Earth, you can imagine that you can go through other realms of dimensions. I want to interject here to say something too. I was listening to a scientist who worked on Skinwalker Ranch recently. I'm going to do an episode about it, kind of a whistleblower thing. And he was talking about how, you know, we tell people that we see prehistoric animals on Skinwalker Ranch, and they don't think it's surprising. Normal people will hear that we see, you know, dire wolves or giant ground sloths near or on Skinwalker Ranch, and people are just like, oh, yeah, I've seen pictures of those online. But that's the issue. Normal people don't understand the fields that go into recording time. And so this entity that has, this animal that has been extinct for 40,000 years, allegedly, but at a minimum has been extinct for a long, long time and is a big animal. It's not like you're finding some little frog or some germ. You're finding a big prehistoric or ice age animal, whatever. And he says, people don't understand paleontology, so they don't think this is surprising at all. So animals coming back to life from prehistoric or ice age times is not surprising to people. So it's ironic here that here is another scientist, and she's saying, you know, they say that there is a fight on time. They're trying to change time. And I'm just saying that because as a scientist, you cannot say something so important, because if you can deal with the little, the smallest energies on Earth, you can imagine that you can go through other realms of dimensions. You cannot say something so important. I'm just saying that because as a scientist, you cannot say something so important. That's the same thing, pretty much, that this guy who worked on Skinwalker Ranch was saying. He's like, they don't understand. The regular people, they don't understand why this stuff is incredible. But it is, in fact, incredible, mind-blowing, paradigm-shattering discoveries that we are just kind of like not impressed by, because we don't understand why those discoveries or those sightings or those conversations or those projects, we don't understand why they're so insane. Because I saw a mammoth on the Google the other day. So I bet you could ask like 50% of the people out there don't even know that mammoths are extinct. I really bet that you could walk around on the street in your city and ask 500 people how many mammoths are alive today, and they would literally look at you with eyes like flying saucers. 300? 4? I don't know. How many mammoths are alive today? Because there's a lot of people out there who don't understand where they are in their own timeline. They don't understand the universe that they live in. They don't understand how things happen. They don't understand... Sorry. And they don't understand timeline shifts and dimensional, like wall shattering, so that you can go through portals and bring entities and demons back with you and all of that kind of stuff. All of this doesn't make sense. Therefore, nobody is really that scared of it, except people who are spiritual, because people who are spiritual understand the spiritual realm a little bit differently than people who don't. That was a long talk there, but I would argue that we are not necessarily trying to break something into this realm necessarily, like on purpose, sort of like orcs through the portals in that World of Warcraft movie that totally sucked but had Travis Fimmel in, who's really dope.
What is that?
Gul'dan's magic.
You offer my magic with life. We only have enough prisoners to send through our strongest warriors. but that will be enough. The enemy is weak. When we arrive, we will take them as fuel. We will build a new portal. And when it is complete, we will bring through all of the Horde.
I love it when the movies tell us what we already know. But they think they're pulling one over on us. And I know, everybody's looking at me right now like this dude thinks World of the Warcraft is real life. Well, so did your ancestors. So let's take a look at some of this stuff here. He's talking about portals. He's talking about how he needs life. Life is his fuel. The technology is stone. That's it. The technology is stone. And he's using magic to open a portal so he can send the Horde through. But not all the Horde. Only the strongest few so that they can abduct more people from the other side, because they're going into the realm of men. That's what that portal is projecting them into. And they're going to abduct men, pull them back, and animals too. They are able to siphon power from animals too. And they're going to abduct them, take them, and then use their life to open a stronger portal to allow more through to bring about the final destruction. And I know it's a video game and I know it's a movie. World of Warcraft is not real life. But entertainment can project elements of an ancient truth sometimes. And this is a corny movie with, you know, corny plot lines, but...
Wow. Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
It rings a couple bells. Sometimes I feel like we equate the power of Satan to the power of God. And I don't know if that's because of various biblical translations where that talk about how powerful and beautiful and loved Satan was or what. But I think it's pretty important to understand that these things can't accomplish whatever they want. So yes, they are fallen angels. Yes, they are demons. Yes, they are Nephilim and all this kind of stuff. But these are not all-powerful, all-knowing creatures. And so I would assume that they don't really know how the world is going to end yet. They probably are living in a delusion, just like we are here on Earth, that they are going to reign forever, that they're going to engage in war on time that essentially reverses the return of Christ, because they probably do know about prophecy, and Satan has met Christ, and so he would know about what the mission is, but he might not know the actual end result yet. He might just know the desired result, but in his mind, he can stop it. And so, all that being said, these things can't just do whatever they want. When they do whatever they want, in the Bible, it makes it sound like a great deal of the time what they're doing is the power of God working through them. And yes, they are powerful creatures, but just like you or me, we couldn't exist without, say, for instance, our heart. We would die instantly without the heart beating blood in our chest. I don't know if angels have organs like that, but if they did, I kind of doubt it because they're spiritual entities, right? But in the same way, the angel needs a heart, and traditionally that heart is believed to be in God. And so without that, they probably don't have all of the power and knowledge that God originally gave them. Maybe they do. I don't know. I'm speaking speculatively here. But I'm of the mind that they are not able to just do whatever they want whenever they want, or else this planet would already be way, way worse. So I think maybe there is some type of problem that they are experiencing when it comes to elevating the status of humanity to the point of them no longer wanting or believing in God. And who knows what that is? You know, who knows what that is? It kind of goes back to like the quantum immortality concept, where it's like there's this belief that every time the planet would be destroyed, something stops it, and that we've already destroyed the planet, quote unquote, multiple times, but each time it's like an instant switch in the meta, and we're just back on Earth in a different reality where that didn't happen. You know, it's like that book, The Man in the High Castle, which was also an Amazon show, which is really good, by the way. You should watch it. But you know, in that show, in that book, which is written by the same guy who wrote Blade Runner, by the way. But or Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, whatever you want to call it. But either way, I digress. The Nazis won World War II in that book, and yet there were like glimpses of a meta universe where they did not, where what actually happened. And the concept is that this has happened many times, or at least several times throughout history. And each time that Satan, the powers of evil, or humanity would get us to the point where the planet is destroyed, some invisible force stops it. Same thing with real life. This is where like kind of like the concept of reincarnation. You die, but until the appointed time, you kind of when you die, you are navigated back into a body where you're not dead. And so through CERN, we are trying to establish that connection. And I'm sure all of the scientists on the, you know, the ground floor don't know about that. These are elevated projects that are only discussed by people who do not have social security numbers, and then selectively passed on to people who do have social security numbers. So it's not like the regular scientist knows I'm trying to open a demonic, a portal to a demon realm so that I can bring back the overlords so that they can defeat Jesus in the end times. These scientists don't think like that, but they do have pagan gods right outside their offices, statues and whatnot. And they are talking about something called a god particle. That's what they called it. And they are talking about portals. All of these are like very spiritual things. You know, these are things that are spiritual. They're trying to say that portals are technological, or they're, you know, something like that, but they're not physical. You can't necessarily touch a portal. It's like touching air, you know, like it doesn't really work that way. So on the surface level, the scientists are performing science in their minds, not realizing that they may in fact, and I'm not saying they are, I haven't seen what's actually going on inside CERN. So everything I'm saying is alleged. What I would classify what they're doing is sometimes witchcraft. It's akin to witchcraft. It's throwing ingredients at each other until something works. It's mixing everything together and smashing things together and specific things in specific ways, using specific calculations and specific measurements to get a specific super fantastic and unimaginable and seemingly magical result, right? That's what it is. They went to college to learn all this kind of stuff, so they're not thinking I'm performing witchcraft. But the guys without a social security number, they kind of know the direction that they have set their peasants on. They kind of know where they have channeled their magicians to research. It's actually quite a bit like Pharaoh and Moses, and the way that Pharaoh stuck his magicians on the task of proving that everything Moses did was just a trick and not the power of God. We know the fallen angels are bound, earthbound, at a minimum, in some capacity, according to these Bible verses. We've got some angels who appear to be in prison in Tartarus. You know, we've got some under the Tigris and the Euphrates. We've got some that may be already in the abyss. And then, you know, we've got these other ones like Satan and some others that are free to roam the earth and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, we've got the Nephilim bones that appear quite physical and real at times. So if all that's the case, unless CERN are trying to break something out, CERN is or CERN are, whatever you want to say, unless they're trying to break something out of a spiritual prison there, I'm not sure what they would be opening a portal for. maybe it's just to see if they can. Sometimes scientists just do stuff to see what happens. That's how they come about with these great discoveries. But all the magical and pagan iconography around CERN and all of the rumors and all of the stuff that they're doing and the lack of the way that they've come out and said, dude, we're not doing that. Here's what we're actually doing. I know you can go and read about what's happening at CERN. And if you actually look at like their deep research papers and all that kind of stuff, yeah, they're doing very intense scientific experimentation. And it doesn't seem like it's all to bring back demons or whatever. But when you take the whole picture and you look at it, you step back and you look at it all, it's like science and myth and magic are mixing here. But on the subject of lost time, some people really do think that CERN has already broken our timeline. And when we consider certain hot points in time, like Y2K or 2012, you know, 2012 always felt like kind of a weird year. You had the London Olympics, the Mayan calendar hype. Isn't that when the Mayan calendar ended? Everybody joking about the end of the world, you know? And Y2K was the same way. Make sure to turn your computers off on year 2000 so that, you know, because we actually thought something weird was going to happen. And all of this blurred together, and looking back, it almost feels symbolic. And that was also, by the way, when CERN announced the discovery of the God particle. It was everywhere for a week, and then it was gone from the headlines. I'm sure you guys remember. And around the same time, people started noticing strange little timeline shifts. The Berenstain Bears were suddenly Berenstain. The Fruit of the Loom lost its cornucopia. The Monopoly guy, he had no monocle. Luke, I am your father, was never actually said. Pikachu's tail doesn't actually have a black tip. It felt like small pieces of our collective memory just literally got rewritten overnight. And people remember realizing that these changes had happened when they were just reading, you know, like a Berenstain Bears book, and all of a sudden they're stopping mid-sentence because they thought they're like seeing a misprint or something, or the cornucopia, you know, their underwear doesn't have a cornucopia on it anymore, and it's like, what's going on? And they start looking it up, and all of a sudden everything appears different than how they thought it really was. And this is, you know, many thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions, I'm not sure how many people actually report the Mandela effects, but a ton of people. Somewhere deep under the French-Swiss border, it appears that a switch flipped. And for a fraction of a second, the universe actually saw a reflection of itself. And this time it was a little bit different. The Large Hadron Collider, which is 17 miles of magnets that are colder than outer space, this Hadron Collider smashes protons together at nearly the speed of light. And of course, they're saying that it's to understand how matter gets mass. But one of CERN's directors even said the experiment might open a doorway into another dimension. So he may have meant it figuratively, but why even phrase it that way? And, you know, some people say this is just all coincidence, man. You need to chill out. It's physics doing what physics does and humans seeing patterns where none exist. But there's something poetic about it, too. You've got to admit, they built a machine to recreate the first instant of the universe. And outside it stands a statue of the destroyer and creator god Shiva. Even if it's only symbolism, it's pretty haunting, okay? I mean, it's kind of like, it's literally humans dabbling with the powers that we have legends and tales of gods having. That's literally what it is. The power to open portals and go wherever we want and create things from nothing and figure out where mass comes from and if we can destroy it. And like, this kind of stuff is not, this is like, this is God level stuff. We're trying to do what God does. That's the literal mission. And you know, right now, I get it. This sounds like just another crazy YouTube rabbit hole from this guy who's clearly unhinged and losing his mind. I think I've got it on straight. I think it's probably people who think I'm crazy who are crazy, but days definitely appear to be blurring by these days. Weeks vanish. People all the time are saying things like, where did all the time go? Like, you blink and you miss it. What if that's not because of the mundane, monotonous style of modern life, but what if time is actually changing because of stuff that's happening? We're always talking about these Mandela effects. We're always talking about these timeline shifts. We're always talking about quantum immortality and portals. We're always talking about how God could suspend the sun in the sky for a battle to complete, or cause this time, you know, like all, you know, like, I don't know, every example of God doing insane things with the heavenly bodies, but he does, you know. And then we got these different parties, you know, the Little Season people who believe that Christ already returned, and that's why all the time is messed up and everything looks weird, is because Satan basically hid that Christ returned, and so now nothing makes sense. And it's like, okay, well, if you're going to use that argument and you're going to go and you're going to look at biblical texts and stuff too, then you should also figure that it's more likely, it's more than likely that time itself has just not been accurately recorded, because time can change, because time is kind of, time in of itself is not a human construct. God invented time when he gave us the day-night cycle, but that was time. That's what time was. It was a day-night cycle. He didn't say that every day is going to be perfectly 24 hours for the rest of time. As far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to put words in God's mouth or take words out of him. But I don't know of anywhere that I could find that actually says that for the rest of time, 24 hours is what the day is going to be. But of course, we have the scientists who are constantly being like, oh, if we even lost 2 minutes out of our day, everything on Earth would collapse and all this kind of stuff. But I'm not going to lie, it feels like I've been missing minutes since I turned 18 and got thrust into the system. Okay.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just reflecting on all the nostalgia. Maybe it's all the stress and the algorithms and, you know, like the endless doom scrolling. Or maybe when those protons collided, something actually shifted in the timeline just enough to knock us into the next version of reality, or a different path, sort of a different metaphysical kind of path that changed time a little bit. All of this reminds me of when, you know, we were told that we're not going to know the time or the hour of Christ's return. It's just so crazy to me that we actually think we have a proper timeline that we can follow when we're literally told not to worry about the time. Because I think God knew that the time was going to get all messed up for a very long while. Time was going to be essentially unrecordable, because people are going to be doing crazy things, angels are going to be doing crazy things, demons and Nephilim crazy things, God's going to be doing crazy things, Christ is going to come back, all this stuff. And it's like, none of that's going to change time at all. Like, we have stories of the sun and the moon being suspended in the sky, and we're just like, that doesn't change time. What are you, like, there's a certain logic that you have to apply to the spiritual sometimes, honestly. And we can't just independently be like, time. Nope, see, here's where we got time wrong. We don't know when we got time wrong. We get time wrong almost probably daily. There's this weird situation, for instance, time zones. I know, everybody's going to be like, he's talking about time zones? This guy's dumb. He doesn't even understand time zones. I do understand time zones. But let me just point out that somebody in a different time zone can be living in an entirely different calendar day. That doesn't make sense. It makes sense in the fact that, like, the orbit within that framework, it makes sense. What about the framework that this guy is living in a different day and he's talking to me as I'm still in the other day, and yet you're trying to tell me that somehow we're in the same day? This is quite literally a flagrant and belligerent display of not recording what's actually happening. We're in the same day, but we're not going to record it that way. He's in Australia day, you're in the USA day. They're not the same day, but they are the same day. Okay, my point is, some things are just how people record them, not how they actually are. And that's a weird way to record something. That's a weird way to make something recorded. And now CERN is building something even bigger, the Future Circular Collider, which is more than 3 times the size of the Hadron Collider they've got now. And officially, they say that it's to study dark matter, but unofficially, I'm not sure what it's for. Maybe we're just living in 2012 and they figured it out that we're still stuck here and they're trying to get us back on track. Sometimes I literally wonder if 2012 never ended. It just kind of forked into another direction. The whole Mayan thing, I don't really think that was the end of the world when the Mayan calendar ended in December in 2012. I think it was just the beginning of the downfall of this sort of cognitive experience. And somehow we've been essentially subjugated to some kind of tampering with the time-space continuum or something. I don't know. It's just another example of what happened. It's not necessarily something that I can point to and tell you, see, this is exactly what happened or whatever. It's just a feeling. And when you combine all of these other feelings about the time being lost, and then you compare them to all the times that actually, in which time actually was lost, it's like, okay, yeah, it definitely felt like something strange in that moment. And now, again, I just kind of feel it in my bones. And a lot of people do. I talk to a lot of people these days. I reach out to followers and stuff, and I kind of just communicate once in a while. Not all the time, but once in a while when I need to be grounded. And a lot of people feel it in their bones. Something ain't right. Something happened to a part of us all that we don't recognize. It's like this dimensional thing, a collective unconscious type of thing. People are now looking for conflict. Authority is a spectacle. Technology is fear-mongering. Progress is burdensome, or if it even happens at all. It's like we're being conditioned for our own demise, or that thriving has somehow become something that we'll just never experience again. It's extinct. And it feels like what? It feels like the end of days, the end of time. We might just be walking into another reset. I hate to say that to all the people who are eagerly awaiting Christ's return, and understand that I am just speaking. I don't even know if I fully believe that myself. I'm just saying that it's like these types of situations have happened throughout history, and it seems like a lot. And that's why everything is kind of messed up when it comes to time and recording it. The new chronology is this sort of pseudo-historical theory that argues that events generally attributed to the ancient civilizations of like Rome and Greece and Egypt, among others, they actually occurred in the Middle Ages, during the medieval ages, which is more than 1,000 years later. It also proposes that world history prior to 1600 AD was centered around a global empire called Great Tartaria. And that empire has been widely falsified to essentially suit the interests of a number of different conspirators, according to the powers that be, including the Vatican and the Holy Roman Empire as a whole, as well as the Russian House of Romanov. this Tartaria theory is a very interesting one, and it's one that needs to be approached and really considered, I think, because I think aspects of it are very true and aspects of it are not true at all, and that's just part of what you got to decide for yourself. Like, I think it's hilarious the fact that they try to argue there's no toilets in the old days. There are toilets. People have been shitting and wiping their asses since the dawn of mankind. But the theory of Tartaria, which sounds like Tartarus, doesn't it? Which is where the fallen angels are locked up. Interesting. Anyway, call me a bad student of history or whatever you want to call me, but I had never heard of this David Rohl's Egyptian new chronology before doing research for this this show here. David Rohl's Egyptian new chronology is very compelling in some situations and very frustrating in others, but it is one of the better versions of history, maybe misdated, because it doesn't require you to believe that all of civilization is fake. It asks a more dangerous, kind of cleaner, easier to understand question. What if the Bible is not archaeologically void? You know, they're always saying stuff like, well, we're not finding any archaeological evidence of the people in the Bible. What if historians are just simply looking in the wrong century? And also, before I go much further, if we're not finding archaeological evidence for people in the Bible, it's because a lot of those times those people weren't like world renowned. It's not like nowadays where they were having Time magazine take their photos and, you know, having statues of them built and plastered up on every social media page. These were just regular guys. Why would, do you think there's going to be archaeological evidence for me? And they're going to be like, we found him. Maybe. Anywho, Rohl is not saying that ancient Egypt didn't exist or that Rome didn't exist. He's not saying that the entire ancient world is some kind of like medieval hallucination or something. His claim is that parts of Egyptian chronology, especially from the New Kingdom through the Third Intermediate Period, have been stretched far too long. And if these dynasties are compressed and moved forward, then suddenly major biblical events appear to actually line up with archaeology in ways the conventional timeline does not allow. Now, this is an interesting theory because what people, for instance, I'm not dragging anybody. I hope everybody knows I'm not dragging anybody for their beliefs. I feel like the little seasonists are basically saying, like, almost like, I don't know sometimes whether they're trying to imply that Satan literally changed time or if they're trying to say that Satan just confused our understanding of what happened in the past. I don't think Satan can change time. I don't think he can change anything about this planet, to be honest with you. I think that any change is change that has been caused by mankind being convinced to make those changes by these fallen ones, such as Satan. Also, I think that certain, like, unexplainable mysteries, natural disasters, volcanic eruptions, like, things like this, these are all attributed to God. I don't think that the angels have any power over manipulating time and space like that. I do think that they can abduct creatures and change their biology through tampering with them, but that's a little bit different than, say, changing time or changing matter from nothing to something. You know what I mean? Because Satan can't create life. He just simply can't. He can only convince life to destroy itself. Remember that, because it's key in defeating him. But mainstream Egyptology and Rohl don't really mix. They haven't accepted his new chronology because the standard view, as is obvious to see, still places Egypt's dynasties within the conventional framework according to the proof that they've found. And if they ever make any kind of changes, they're only these minute little changes. But Rohl's model, by contrast, suggests that we should be moving parts of Egyptian history by as much as several centuries even. especially the 19th through 25th dynasties. That is why this theory remains controversial. But even critics admit that Egyptian chronology has these pressure points. A major science study on Egyptian dating openly states that dynastic chronology depends on reign lengths inferred from written and archaeological evidence, and that these so-called floating chronologies are fixed to absolute dates by only a few astronomical observations, which, by the way, still remain debated. So in other words, there's parts of Egyptian history that are held together by threads. There's parts of Egyptian history that, even though we think we have an understanding of it, we really don't. For instance, the most glaring representation of this, the pyramids. We don't know who the heck built them. We don't know how the heck they built them. We don't know why the heck they built them. We know almost nothing about the pyramids, allegedly. The changes were made. Mankind and evil powers are changing time. And as we can see from this research too, God changes time throughout the course of our experience here as well. Time does not stay the same. And we see this example presented in the Bible many times. Time is manipulable. It is relative. It's not something that remains fixed and we just travel upon it. Time is a river that can be channeled. It is a directional flow of something. God has altered it by making it longer or shorter, you know, like a day, longer or shorter, a measurement of time. So you could say like that's kind of like a, you know, like a one directional change. We have no idea how time has changed in other ways or in other directions. So essentially, time is perpetually a reconstruction of itself. We are reconstructing it constantly. And perhaps this is a brilliant endeavor on behalf of mankind, a brilliant reconstruction time and time again. But at the end of the day, it's still a reconstruction. It's not something that we know without a shadow of a doubt. And I think we should remember, Egypt is the anchor of the ancient world. Guys, if Egyptian chronology moves, everything that is tied to Egypt moves with it. The Levant, the biblical patriarchs, the Exodus, the conquest of Canaan, the united monarchy of Saul, David, Solomon, even the great heroic ages, the Greek and Roman ones. Rawls' theory is not just about Egypt. It's a domino effect. If you move the Egyptian pillar, and then suddenly the whole ancient Near Eastern archive is beginning to move as well. So Rawls' basic claim is that scholars have essentially looked for biblical events in the wrong archaeological layers. And whether that has been done on purpose or not, who knows? But I would wager yes, on purpose, because science is currently ruling this world. And we need to fix that. But regardless, science is ruling this world. So anything that comes against science is going to be suppressed. And we know this. The reason that we're not seeing or finding anything is because they don't want us to see it or find it. A good example of that, for instance, is that the Exodus is often placed around the time of Ramses II in the 13th century BC.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
that kind of creates a major problem because the expected evidence for a massive Israelite presence, a slave population, an Exodus event, and a conquest of Canaan, it's either missing, it's ambiguous, or it's assigned to the wrong period. People like to say things like, I think maybe we have been here for a lot longer than 5, 6, 7,000 years, whatever they say. And the Bible can still be right while saying that. That does not contradict the Bible whatsoever. When you see entire timelines missing from the archaeological construct here, you do have to ask yourself a question. And that question shouldn't be, is the Bible not true because I haven't found any archaeological discoveries that would prove it so in this particular little area? No. The question you should be asking is, am I not looking in the right area? Then you might find something different. Rohl's answer to all of this is simple. The evidence isn't missing because it never happened. The evidence is missing because the dating system has put the search party in the wrong area at the wrong time. That's what's going on. The key location is Avaris, modern Tel El Daba, in the eastern Nile Delta. And this is where the theory kind of gets really interesting. Tel El Daba is not fantasy archaeology. It is actually a major excavated site. And the Austrian Archaeological Institute identifies Tel El Daba as ancient Avaris, the Hyksos capital, and says that excavations have been ongoing there for decades. At its peak, though, Avaris covered more than 260 hectares, and many have held roughly 28,000 to 35,000 people living there, making it one of the largest cities in the ancient Near East during the second millennium BC. It was also, coincidentally, an important harbor and trade center with links to the Levant and Cyprus. Okay? Why does any of this matter? Why did you just tell me all that boring stuff about this place I've never heard of that clearly doesn't sound like it has anything to do with the Israelites? Well, from the late 12th dynasty onward, a community of Asiatics carrying Syro-Palestinian Middle Bronze Age culture settled there and enlarged the town. So in other words, there really was a Semitic or West Asiatic population in the Eastern Nile Delta during the Middle Kingdom Second Intermediate Period transition. That does not automatically mean that these were the Israelites, but it does create exactly the kind of archaeological environment the Genesis and Exodus traditions would require. Ramses II is simply not realistic, but this other theory that Rohl presents is that Semitic people were in Egypt, they were in the Delta, they were connected to Canaan, and they were living in a major settlement that later becomes bound up with the memory of Ramses. So Rohl takes that real archaeological fact and turns it into some sort of radical identification for what happened. In his own book, Pillars of the New Chronology, he argues that proto-Israelites entered Egypt during the late 12th dynasty, and that Joseph served under Senesret III and Amenemhat III, and that the Asiatic settlement at Avaris represents the settlement of Jacob and his sons. He further argues that the biblical sojourn in Egypt is a memory of the Asiatic movement into the Eastern Delta during the late Middle Kingdom and the early Second Intermediate Period. So, interesting concepts here that would actually move our biblical picture where it's supposed to be in the archaeological record. And it basically presents that this all of these findings are still there in plain sight for whoever will go find them. But they remain unfound, or if they have been found by establishments such as the Vatican or something like that, you know, this dark archaeology society that is running out there that nobody ever talks about, but should definitely, because they're out there scooping up all of the artifacts that would prove the Bible correct, all of that kind of stuff, they're probably just not looking in the same place, or it's all been taken away. Don't get yourself all twisted up with this timeline and being like, well, there's no proof for this or no proof for that. It's there. We just aren't looking in the right place, because that's one of the real tricks of Satan. Manipulating you so that what is in front of your very eyes does not appear to be in front of your very eyes. It appears to be something else entirely. So the evidence is probably sitting there in plain sight, but just under the wrong label entirely. The conventional historian out there will say stuff like, okay, yes, this is exactly evidence of Asiatics in Egypt. And Roll will say, yes, it is. It is evidence of Asiatics in Egypt. And what exactly did you expect the Israelites to look like archaeologically? That's the nerve of his entire theory, and it's a great nerve to hit, because ancient Israelites would not necessarily leave behind little signs saying, hey, we're Israelites. They would appear as Semitic migrants from Canaan, absorbed into Egyptian systems. They would be living in the Delta. They would be using Egyptianized material culture. They would be, retain some, like, you know, traits from the Levant or whatever, but primarily they would probably look a lot like Egyptians. They probably dressed like Egyptians, spoke the language the Egyptians were speaking, the dialects the Egyptians were speaking. They were literally living within that kingdom. And so it's interesting how when you look at all the Disney movies and all the other stuff like that, you do see, or not Disney, what is it, DreamWorks movies, The Prince of Egypt and all these other movies like that, they're always like distinctly visibly different. I don't think that's realistic at all. They probably looked exactly like the place that they lived in. Even though I am from a winter wonderland, when I go to Cartagena and Colombia, where it's 110 degrees on a typical summer day, I'm not going to continue dressing like I live in an Arctic zone. I'm going to dress like the locals, and I'm going to start taking layers off because it's hot. They would have done the same exact thing. But what archaeology seems to like to do is search for what they think they would look like, not what they actually looked like. So if you were determined not to connect that population with the biblical narrative, you could call them Asiatics, Canaanites, or Hyksos-related peoples. You could call them migrant laborers or some other kind of Delta settler, but they are what they are. If you were to open the Book of Possibilities to the chapter of Roll's model, you would potentially see this may be evidence of Jacob's family moving into Egypt, which would now make the Bible archaeologically sound in this capacity. Roll's most dramatic identifications go even further, though. He argues that Joseph belongs in the late 12th dynasty, and he links the Exodus not to Ramses II's reign, but to the end of the 13th dynasty, before the rise of Hyksos. And in his promotional material for his lectures, his model is summarized as placing the Exodus tradition in the Middle Bronze 2A period. And when a Western Asiatic population moved in there, they settled in the Eastern Delta during the late 12th dynasty. And then they abandoned that city at the end of the 13th dynasty before Hyksos arrived. Hyksos is a Greek term that's basically derived from the ancient Egyptian phrase Heka Kasut, which means rulers of foreign lands. So when I'm talking about Hyksos, it's these rulers of foreign lands that are coming to Egypt. It referred to a group of nomadic and West Asian immigrants who basically took control of northern Egypt during the second intermediate period around 1630 to 1530 BC. All this is very fascinating because it converts the Exodus from a missing event into simply a misfiled event, which is another thing that seems like a very simple mistake to make on behalf of somebody with the power to do so purposely. Under this view, the Bible's not going to be wrong. The archive is. The history book is. The person who wrote it down wrong. And they may have done it on purpose, they may not have. Satan blinds people in mysterious ways sometimes. We don't know if we're doing stuff on purpose or not sometimes. This is one of those situations. But then comes the Shishak problem. In the conventional chronology, the biblical Shishak, who invades Judah during the reign of Rehoboam, is usually identified with Pharaoh Shawshank I. And I know this is good. This is about to get real historical, okay, everybody? Hang in there. This is one of those major anchors that connects biblical history with Egyptian history. Roll completely rejects that identification of Pharaoh Shashank I being the one who invaded Judah, okay? Instead, he identifies the biblical Shishak with Ramesses II. And that is a massive move because it pulls Ramesses II forward. It means that we placed Ramesses II in the wrong place as well. And it pulls him in forward by centuries, and it rewires the entire relationship between Egypt and the United Monarchy. This isn't something that is disproven. Keep that in mind. Everything that I'm telling you, this isn't anything that has been disproven. This is stuff that Roll is arguing they're calling something else. He's like, we have the evidence of all of this stuff, but they're calling it something else. They're not calling it what the Bible calls it. They're just labeling it as something else. So why does all this matter? Because Ramesses II is no minor pharaoh. He is one of the great pharaohs, the monumental king. He is the builder. He is the imperial shadow cast across Egypt's memory. So if Roll is right, then one of the most famous pharaohs in world history has been placed in the wrong political context. And then suddenly, Ramesses is not simply the pharaoh of the Hollywood Exodus imagination. He becomes the Egyptian invader of Solomon's aftermath. He is the pharaoh who enters the biblical world after the golden age has sort of fallen apart. And that is the kind of identification that makes a mainstream scholar be like, okay, dude, what, was Alexander the Great in 2012 too? There's this guy named Kenneth Kitchen. He's one of the major authorities on the Third Intermediate Period. He strongly criticized Roll's revision, and many scholars argue that Shashank I remains the better fit for the biblical Shishak. The debate continues. But the mainstream view also argues that Roll's model creates more problems than it solves. You know, and the mainstream model might want to do that because they don't want this to be investigated further. I don't know. And admittedly, that is the weakness of the theory. His theory is very seductive because it solves certain biblical archaeology problems. But chronology is not a single drawer to go fishing around in, okay? It is a massive spider web. If you move Egypt, you must also move Assyria. You must also move Babylon. You must also move the Hittites. You have to move Canaan. You have to move Cyprus. You have to move Greece. You have to move the Levant. I mean, this is a massive thing, but what do you expect when you're manipulating time itself? Every synchronism becomes a tripwire. A corrected Bible timeline in one place is bound to create chaos somewhere else. The phantom time hypothesis is a theory that a lot of people say is probably wrong, but it is one of the most beautiful wrong theories ever invented, if that is the case, because it has everything. It has the missing centuries, it has forged kings and dragons and religious power and Charlemagne and the church coming to being in a big way. It has imperial legitimacy and mystery kings and Merlin and all this kind of stuff. And this theory was popularized by German writer Heribert Illig in the 90s. Its claim is simple. Roughly 297 years of history, usually placed between AD 614 and AD 911, never happened. And according to this idea, that calendar was artificially extended. The early Middle Ages were just completely inflated. The Carolingian period was manufactured. Charlemagne, or at least the Charlemagne of official history, he's just a synthetic emperor that has been essentially inserted into the record to give Europe their grand founding myth. And under this theory, we're not living in the year that we think we are. The year 2026 would actually be closer to 1729. But the deeper claim is even more radical. Illig's theory often has been framed around three possible conspirators. We have the Holy Roman Emperor Otto III, Pope Sylvester II, which I've made an episode about 100 years ago, and sometimes Byzantine Emperor Constantine VII. The alleged motive was power through chronology. By manipulating the Anno Domini dating system and inserting phantom centuries into the past, Otto III could place himself near the sacred year of AD 1000, giving his reign some sort of millennial significance. And then the empire would not just rule land, but they would also rule time, according to his concept, his theory. Most people think that calendars are just these neutral things, right? But they're not. Calendars are control systems. They tell civilizations when to worship and work and pay their rent and taxes, and when to plant and harvest and celebrate, and when to go to war, and what to remember when, and, you know, when to expect the end of the world, right? So whoever controls the calendar is naturally going to control the ritual rhythm of civilization. So phantom time works not because it's proven, but because it touches something that's actually really real. Empires actually do use time as power. Churches do structure their sacred history in a specific way that benefits them. Regimes do rewrite origin stories, and dynasties absolutely forge genealogies. The medieval world was not just about, you know, the peasants and the kings. It revolved around manuscripts and clergy and kings and relics and monasteries and suppressed knowledge. They had a population they were controlling that could not allegedly read and must trust the people of power with literally their souls because they don't know anything. There was a massive media and knowledge withholding from the population in the medieval ages. So, of course, the kings and the churches are going to do everything they possibly can when there's nobody to hold them accountable. Now we can point fingers and be like, hey, you just did that. But back, and then they'll say, yeah, get over it. No, or no, we didn't. Or no, the Epstein files didn't exist. But at least back then, we didn't know they were doing it. But Illig's basic suspicion begins with the so-called darkness of the early Middle Ages. And he and others, of course, argued that the period between the 7th and 10th centuries looks now, as it is presented, suspiciously empty. It has nothing going on in it. It's stagnant in parts of the archaeological and documentary record that it shouldn't be. There's too few buildings here. There's too few artifacts there. There's too much reliance on copies of copies. There's too many suspicious texts. There's too much Charlemagne, right? The theory says that this isn't just a poorly documented age. It's a manufactured age, a historical filler zone inserted between real periods. In 2013, there was a discussion at the University of Graz. A bunch of historians got together, and Illig reportedly described the early medieval period, and he did so by calling it a continuous dark zone, sort of in a vacuum that demanded some kind of explanation. That's basically the strongest version of the theory. Not we found one weird manuscript, but that it appears an entire civilization seems to have passed through some kind of historical fog somehow. We missed that part of history, I guess. Even critics at the event acknowledged that Illig was putting his finger on some real sore spots in medieval history, but they still didn't come away agreeing with him, just for the record. But the early Middle Ages were very, very strange. The Western Roman Empire collapses, cities begin to shrink, people slip into illiteracy, the coinage becomes really uneven, the financial system is strange, there's widespread war and raiding and famines and all sorts of destruction, the long-distance trade routes weaken, the written records do survive through monasteries and later copying, but a lot of those texts we're not really sure what to think of them for the most part. But then, out of that gray world, who appears but our hero Charlemagne? He's the great restorer. He's the king of the Franks. He's the emperor in the West. He's this patron of learning, the sponsor of the Carolingian Renaissance. He is the father of Europe and the only reason that I exist by that logic. And so, to the mainstream historian, Charlemagne is extremely real. But to the phantom time theorist, He's too perfect. He couldn't have existed. He becomes the suspiciously convenient bridge between Rome and medieval Europe, they say. The empire falls, the darkness spreads, and then a giant appears to resurrect imperial order in Christian form. And I'm not going to lie, I do get a little bit of Alexander the Great vibes. In like actual history, we have these lore figures that were actually real. Alexander the Great and Charlemagne are two of those people where it's like they could be placed within a realm of myth, and yet we consider them real. And just real quick, the grave of Charlemagne has allegedly been found. Probably it's like, I don't want everybody to think that, oh, Charlemagne's not real, even though there are all these theories that say Charlemagne's not real. The people who say Charlemagne is real, they do have very good reason to believe that he is real, because the grave of Charlemagne was allegedly found. And it was considered, you know, a pretty big event at the time. The first time his grave was opened was in the year 1000 by order of the young emperor, guess who? Otto III. And already by then, the exact location within Charlemagne's palace in Aachen had been lost, suggesting that there wasn't even a gravestone or other monument pointing it out.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
So the workmen had to lift the floors of the imperial chapel in Aachen until they found the great emperor's last resting place. And now let me quote for you the eyewitness report of Count Lamo, who was there with the emperor. He, Charlemagne that is, did not lie, as the dead otherwise do, but sat as if he was living. He was crowned with a golden crown and held in his gloved hand a scepter. The fingernails had protruded through the gloves and stuck out. Above him was a canopy of limestone and marble. As we entered, we broke through this. At our entrance, a strong smell struck us. We immediately gave Emperor Charles our kneeling homage, and Emperor Otto robed him on the spot with white garments, cut his nails, and put in order the damage that had been done. Emperor Charles had not lost one of his members to decay, except only for the tip of his nose. Emperor Otto replaced this with gold, took a tooth from Charles' mouth, walled up the entrance to the chamber, and withdrew again. The next time the grave was opened was in 1165, this time by Emperor Friedrich I, Barbarossa. He had the body removed and placed into a marble sarcophagus. The bones laid there until 1215, when Emperor Frederick II had them placed into an amazing golden casket where they still are today. And over the years, efforts have been made to try to find this actual grave, but despite applying all of our modern technologies, digs in 1988, which appears to be the last time that this was truly attempted to be done, didn't yield any results at all. And so when I talk about, is Charlemagne real, and say things like, well, have we found his body? It's kind of like Alexander the Great. Have we found his body? It's like, we have kind of way back when, in the medieval ages, when all of this time manipulation stuff is even being talked about. So yeah, they did find some body, and it was allegedly Charlemagne, but this was all done in those conspiracy times, this was all done in those conspiratorial times. So, like, who knows? It's interesting. It's really interesting. Of course, there's all sorts of evidence for their existence and their accomplishments and all sorts of stuff like that. But, I mean, we haven't found them. So, that, you know, were these angels? Like, were these angels who came to Earth and lived as men for not a long time? Alexander the Great died in his 20s. He died before he died in a shorter time than Jesus did, you know, like all that kind of stuff. So it's like, were we in those days experiencing supernatural entities instead of just regular men? Who knows? Regardless, Charlemagne in this story, he appears to, in Christian form, as a narrative hinge. So if you remove Charlemagne, European history is going to inevitably, automatically lose one of its grandest, if not its grandest, origin myth. The theory also leans heavily on the Gregorian calendar reform. In 1582, Pope Gregory the 13th corrected the Julian calendar by dropping 10 days. And Illig argued that if the Julian calendar had actually been drifting since Julius Caesar's time, then the correction should have been about 13 days, not 10. Therefore, he believed that around 3 centuries had been actually added to the timeline. And this sounds elegant, but historians completely reject that argument. Like I said, it's a beautiful story, but the historians can't get on board with this one either. So the phantom time theory is widely considered to not be credible at all, and science and history both say that it fails against archaeology, it fails against astronomy, it fails against global chronology. But the theory, though it may be wrong in a way, is wrong in a way that reveals something true. It points at the fragility of historical memory. It points at how much of the medieval record depends on copying and preserving and ecclesiastical authority, okay? It depends on who's king, who's pope, who's translating, who's copying. It points at Charlemagne as not a mere historical person, but a civilizational symbol. It points at the fact that calendars aren't passive, they are imposed. It points at the fact that timekeeping, sacred history, imperial power, collective memory, they all fuse together to create what we call time today. The people who control the records can decide what a century means, because history doesn't need to be completely fabricated to control the present. It only needs to be curated. A few forged documents that discombobulate everything, a few heroic myths that explain other things, a few adjusted genealogies and missing archives, just a couple of the monasteries deciding what gets copied and what dies, right? A few kings who need some more legitimacy or power for their ventures or their lineage, just another pope who's organizing sacred time to fulfill his own prophecies, right? Scholars who are inheriting the structure in the modern times are now treating all of that as kind of like the precedent for the now. Regardless, we live in strange times, people. Had a great time with you today. Thanks for listening. The life is in the blood.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.